This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
This is Henrik Palmgren, and you can listen to us on a regular basis through RedIceCreations.com. Radio, TV, news, research, videos, films, links, and you name it, on many different topics. Also premiering yesterday, Wednesday the 30th of May 2012, Radio 314 with Lana Loktev, a new radio program on the Red Ice Radio Network. This is a bi-weekly radio program featuring wide-ranging conversations from music to metaphysics. Two programs are up there for you already, with guests Elaine Niakuena and Johnny Enoch. The next guest coming on is Tom Montauk. Check it out, redicecreations.com/radio314. All the links are available from our front page and Radio Archive. Neil Kramer is an English writer, philosopher, and teacher, specializing in the fields of consciousness, metaphysics, and mysticism. Kramer has made a lifelong independent study of philosophy, mystical traditions, shamanism, religion, inner alchemy, occultism, and esoteric world history. And today he returns to Red Ice Radio to discuss his new book, The Unfoldment. And we are going to examine the authentic life and distortion of reality. Stay tuned, as we'll talk about being a participant in The Unfoldment, as we each play a significant role. The Unfoldment is a natural human process, a journey of growth, realization, and ascendance. Welcome back to Red Ice Radio, Neil. It's been a while. Good to have you with us once again, and it's, of course, good to talk to you. How are you?
I am very well, Henrik. It's great to be back. It's been a little while, but it's good to talk to you again.
2 years ago, almost in August. It's way too long, but it's good to hear your voice. And
I know it's just whizzed by that time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And you've been busy, and you know, we've all been busy, I guess. But you've obviously released your first book.
Yes, indeed. Yeah,
The Unfoldment. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's really a synthesis of the things that I have been thinking and feeling and talking about for the last few years, really. And obviously, because of technology, it's been typically quite easy to publish one's own stuff just there on the fly in blogs and online very easily. So you can share your words and thoughts and knowledge without any intervention and without anyone being involved. But as time's gone by, happily, really, most of the stuff I've put out there has been very well received, and people have wanted to know more. And then I think it's just reached the point where, you know, getting a nice publisher who's interested in that, having that level of mainstream penetration is quite desirable for me. It's quite an interesting experiment. So it's nice to consolidate everything in a book, but it also gives the opportunity for my thoughts, if you like, to get into the mainstream, as well as the alternative and esoteric communities and so on, who I think, you know, are just definitely just going to enjoy this book, because it's so full of the things that you guys and you know, similar audiences like to think and talk about. But also the mainstream audience who might be a bit interested in the state of the world and why things have gone wrong, and who might be interested in developing themselves a bit better, and who feel that there's another way of doing things. So my sensation is that an awful lot of people in the mainstream deserve a bit of respect and a bit of a chance to do something about that. So that's what I'm trying to do with this book, which is to say, okay, people, stop messing about. There's some interesting stuff, there's some dangerous stuff, but there's also some very exciting stuff going on here. And I think it's reflected in the pages of this book, because it's my personal journey, but there are some themes in it that I think it's very obvious when you look at them. Like any book that's speaking spiritually and from a heart center rather than purely cerebral, that this guy actually means it. So if nothing else, here's a guy who means it, and you can probably relate to a lot of the things he's saying. So yeah. It's a book of philosophy. It's a book of spirit. It's a book of exposure. It's a book of penetration, and I'm very pleased with it.
So it's a bookstores kind of book. It's not just the online kind of thing, I guess. And so what's the have you been involved in anything regarding the strategy of trying to reach the well, you know, the masses? Those are not, you know, usually into these kinds of topics, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of the thing about a book is who publishes it, how big are they, what money's behind it, who, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if you're going to publish a very mainstream book and you're a politician or a celebrity, the success of that is almost determined by the amount of money that gets spent on exposing it.
Oh yeah.
With this, the publisher's New Page Books, part of Career Press, they have quite a nice bunch of authors, like Eric von Daniken, for example, you know, who wrote a very famous book a little while ago. He's one of the authors, and there's so many. Honestly, they all escape me now, come to think of it. But they have a broad range of stuff, and they have a good reach into very wide audiences. So they do specifically look at this material. And what attracted me to them was that they don't really want to change the text significantly. So you get to say pretty much exactly what you want to say. They neaten it up a bit, but if you go for a very mainstream publisher, they will change it. So you can't say that because no one will understand it. You can't say this. You need to choose a shorter word. And anybody who's familiar with my stuff knows that language is quite important to me. So that wouldn't fly with me if there was an editor saying, you can't do this and you can't do that. So very, very fortunately, the lady who edited this book understood the text. And so it's a very pure representation of what I wrote myself, of the manuscript or whatever. So not only does it represent my thoughts and feelings quite well, but through the process, which is, you know, a 9 to 12 month process of saying, here's the manuscript and now it gets out there, that has been very clear and very clean process. And, you know, they also speak to wide audiences. So they go to, you know, obviously shows like yourselves who are very open and very honest in dealing with any kind of material and don't really have any agenda, and there's no sponsorships that are going to influence you, but also go into other things like patriot type people or like new age type people, people interested in yoga and Reiki, people interested in politics, people interested in media and literature. So, you know, the appeal to me is, what proportion of people are interested in this? Because on my travels around the world, if you say that the unfoldment essentially is a representation of real human authentic behavior and power, then I think most people are interested in that. So I have a very optimistic view of this sort of great, unwashed, ignorant rabble. I don't think they're quite as bad as we think they are. And because they're asleep and because they're ignorant, it's kind of like walking into, you know, this, I'm sure you know, in the States, they have this big supermarket called Walmart. And if you go to a big Walmart, a supercenter, in a kind of rough area of town, the people in there are very, very odd looking. They look like the strangest sample of humanity you've ever seen in your life. And there's like this comedic website called People of Walmart that's like just the kind of freaks who go in there. So you can look at this in two ways. You can say, well, the scum of society to some extent go into this place because it's cheap and you can buy cheap food, clothes, goods, kitchenware, etc. And they're just weirdos and it's funny. You can say that, but you can also say, well, they're also our brothers and sisters. There are mothers and fathers, they're our friends, they are us, we are them. I go in there, I shop in there from time to time for certain things. And so you can say, well, do we completely disregard people who do that? Or do we make certain avenues open to them? Do we leave doorways open to them? Because as I'm sure everybody realizes, preaching isn't a good idea. Trying to wake people up isn't very clever anymore, never was. But leaving doors open and saying, hey, if you want to take a step of your own volition in this direction, I'm going to make sure that there's, you know, a welcome there, and I'm going to make sure that there's a level of respect there. So I have been consistently surprised over the past couple of years, particularly living in the States, how very, very mainstream people who are not at all schooled or educated in a formal or esoteric sense very quickly come onto what is true and what is relevant with a tremendously surprising sense of enthusiasm and accuracy. And I've been very humbled by that, because obviously we can get rather up our own bottoms, always only talking to each other about these things,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and in this little community. And you can forget that men and women are good. Men and women can be extremely adaptable, even without the knowledge, when they're given the opportunity and when somebody takes them seriously and says, look, you've got to take the steps here. You've got to propel yourself. No one's going to do that for you. There's no university as such right now for this stuff. However, there's always people at different grades. There's like entry level, intermediary, advanced material. And you will be treated with a certain amount of, let's say, spiritual equanimity if you want to engage with this material. Because right now, in the industrial collapse of the 21st century, where fascism is once again putting the boot in the face, this is a brilliant time for that endeavor, because it will free you from it, and it also gives us an opportunity to totally overturn the whole game. So that's what I am trying to do with this book.
Mm. So when you talk to newcomers, it's usually back to basics. It's about the big picture. It's about to a certain extent mentioning the obvious, perhaps. But and what you mentioned is very, you know, it's broad strokes, you know, wide range. So what areas can the masses, if you will, be reached? This will be different for everybody, what triggers or interests people. But what are some of the main points that you're discussing in the book?
Well, all wisdom is old, I have discovered a while ago from my own personal reflections, that everything that is what you might say, this is a real piece of wisdom, this is real universal gnosis, is old. It's something that was known a long time ago and continues to be known. And when we make contact with that wisdom, we put it in the language of the time. We use the cultural accoutrements and the social vocabulary of the time. So if you're going to talk to 25-year-olds, you need to speak in a certain way. And if you're going to talk to 55 and 75-year-old Republican or conservative men and women, you need to use a certain sort of language. And I think that one of the things that has failed in spiritual philosophy is that it's so abstruse and so specific and elitist, a lot of the language that's been used, that it's necessarily only spoken to a very small audience. So I think you have to put a little bit of humor in it, you know, a bit of street language, a bit of classical scholarly language, some modern cultural references, an appreciation of how important the mysticism of the past is.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to find an alchemy. You can't just throw those together, because you end up with a big vomit stain on the floor. And we don't want that. So you have to find a way of putting these very special ingredients together with a very pleasing result. So you have to fuse these things together. And of course, all we can ever really do when we produce broadcasts of information, whether it's a show like yours or whether it's a book like this, is you give your own personal best attempt at that. And that is essentially what this is, of course. It's Neil Cramer's journey. But when you have a journey, and anyone will know this, you realize on the way that there are other people taking very similar journeys. And when you come upon realizations, when you attain insights into life and into what human beings and human consciousness is capable of, you realize that there's a sense of optimism that is returned to the individual. And you can look around and say, you know, we're not actually that bad. It's not as grim and pathetic as one might think. But you only get to see that truthfully, hand on heart, when you live it. You can't see that and feel it when you think about it and talk about it. That's not enough. It's not half enough. You actually have to do it. You actually have to become a transformation yourself. You have to actually, from week to week, become something different all the time. And that's something that we've been trained not to do, which is one of the fundamental principles of the book. There's like this subtitle, The Path to Clarity, Power, and Transformation. Transformation is absolutely essential to this. And whether you are fed up with the sort of European pathetic quagmire of economic disrespect to its people, if you're a spiritual person hovering around in the forest trying to go your own deep path, or whether you're a political activist wanting to destroy and break things, which is a very relevant thing to do in my view. Sometimes we need to make things and sometimes we need to unmake things. But all those different groups have to realize that there's a personal responsibility here, and they have to realize that in a way we're all doing the same thing, which is making contact with our true self, making contact with what is powerful, and what I would say quite happily is with what is divine. And so from another point of view, one thing that I am doing in my work at the moment is remembering and approaching the divine in a very contemporary way, not as these meek, white-robed wearing pilgrims, which is a very acceptable path if you want to do that. It isn't mine, though. Mine is as more of a warrior, which I think right now, in what you might say a Kali Yuga cycle, is appropriate, not as a soldier, not as a barbarian, but as an elegant warrior, as somebody who understands that consciousness can be wielded like a blade, and consciousness can cut through illusion, through nonsense, and through dishonesty and disrespect in a very powerful and profound way. And so you hear the words authenticity and integrity kind of bandied around quite a little bit nowadays. They're becoming the new trendy words, like consciousness was like 5 or 10 years ago. And that's okay, because I think they're important, good words to say. But when we talk about authenticity, what we're really saying is there is a cerebral understanding of that, a mental thing to say, what do you mean authentic, Kramer? What are you talking about? What, just behaving properly and well? Well, yeah, that's one level. Your conduct is high, yeah? You cannot be a true warrior without high conduct. If you distinguish what, for example, a Japanese samurai would determine himself to be, he is someone who has the same level of conduct on the battlefield or in the temple or in the tea ceremony or in bed or on the toilet, all the same thing, even when nobody's looking. You maintain your conduct, and you do it because you are a pure being and you are capable of living in a state of poise and a state of high spiritual deportment all the time. So you may never need to brandish your blade to configure your consciousness as a weapon. But if you do need to, you do it in a flash. You do it so fast that you behead untruth before it's even had a chance to draw its blade. You can do it. You're faster. You're more powerful. And that is a state of mind, an attitude that I think is very relevant at the moment. And I have very little patience with people who choose to configure their consciousness purely as criticism. I don't want to see that in my life, criticism of something without action and without redress and without resolution. So very much for me, a very important principle has been one's approach to something is very, very fundamental. And the time for negativity is over now. There's no time for that anymore. There's no room for that anymore. So just mapping out endlessly how bad things are is a very puny and a very inappropriate way of spending our time. It's not appropriate thing to do. What is appropriate, I propose, you know, respectfully to anyone who wants to listen, is that you become involved. You actually participate in this global unfoldment. The universe is trying to unfold. People are trying to unfold. Nature is trying to unfold. The galaxy is trying to unfold all the time. It's an evolution. When everything is left to its own natural devices, that unfoldment is a very natural ascendant progression. It's a refinement, and it happens all of its own accord without any hindrance and with complete beauty and elegance and exquisiteness and power. When there is a synthetic obstruction, the unfoldment becomes something different, which is a liberation, a freedom, a breaking through. And that is when breaking the old stuff becomes okay. So destruction is as relevant as creation. So it's not all about ignoring the negative. You have to go boldly and totally into the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that is in the political landscape, the military-industrial landscape, the conspiratorial landscape, your domestic landscape, your relationships with your mothers and wives and brothers and so on, it's all the same thing. It's just at a different level. But that shadow has to be not only understood to be a projection of our inner selves, which we've talked about, you and I, before, but also something that has reached a point where we've already come to maximum negative polarity. The world can't get much more ridiculous than it is. it's about at its optimal state of novel absurdity.
No,
I would say
objection from this end. Yeah,
it is. It really is. And if you get depressed by that, and if one indulges in the fantasy of doom in this respect, then shut your mouth and just go away, because that is a very, very selfish and weak way to behave. What is a more constructive endeavor is to say, well, now we have determined that there is a group of entities, human, semi-human, and entirely non-human, doing things to seek control. We can say that that will always, to some degree, be doing its own dark work. It will always be something going on. There will always be some kind of control and technology and strategy and scheme in the background trying to suppress consciousness.
Mm-hmm. This won't go away. We're not going to get a free pass out of this one.
No, it's not like we all wake up and take over and storm the Bastille and fly our flags and raise our flintlock muskets, you know.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. That's not really something that we need to concern ourselves with. We say, yes, there is a tiny minority of people trapped in shadow, very poor, pathetic creatures trapped in shadow. And some of those creatures, particularly those who have found themselves pushed out of the third density from their own maneuverings into a higher density state, let us say, or another dimension or another realm or another modality, whatever you want to say, they have to nourish themselves to stay there so they don't dissolve through entropy. And they do that through human consciousness. So it's necessary to farm consciousness in that way, Matrix style. And although I have tried to dissuade myself from this and find plausible arguments to the contrary, I haven't been able to do that in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
It seems very much that way. The reason you need 7 billion miserable bastards on Earth is to put the drinking straw into their heads and eat that low-level consciousness as a fuel source, no different to water or sun or fire or oil or coal, just another resource to mm-hmm. be used.
Mm-hmm.
Not even personal. It's not even a personal thing against Neil and Henrik and John and Sarah and Claire and Bob. It's nothing to do with those people. Like the plankton in the ocean, it's not personal when the whale eats them. It just needs to eat to survive. So we have to understand that the administrators of this misery are also in a very pathetic and trapped position. So the sort of globalists, if you like, those who seek an order of centralization, the control system administrators, are a tiny, weak minority and are doing everything they can to try and hold the reins of power in a time of very natural and very global turbulence. And I do tend to feel, the closer and more truthfully and purely I can look at this, the best I can, that turbulence is completely out of everybody's control. And the control system are as clueless as everyone else. as to how that actually happens. So it's as if you know a cataclysm, a reboot, an unveiling, an apocalypse of great beauty is on its way, and everything is going to get turned upside down, rebooted, and squished around. Mm-hmm. And you try and market that as if you know what's going on. And one of the ways to achieve that is to have some narratives within that change that you do indeed create. So you make the natural planetary reboot look like it's yours, you're controlling it, and you can package that however you wish. So it's rather like if there was a riot and people naturally rioted without any adjunct provocateurs, and then you send your guys to the front with flags and make it look like it's your riot, but actually it's not. But that's where you put the focus and the attention on the guys at the front with the blue flags, and you say, look, this is our rebellion. This is our force of nature. And it really isn't. And so, as has been said before by me and other people looking into these things, the big secret of this distortion of reality that we very amusingly and very curiously find ourselves right in the middle of right now, the big secret of it is that no one's in control of it. Mm-hmm. And those who claim they are doing so out of literally desperation. Because if this fuel source of low-level, miserable human consciousness is cut off, those entities cease to exist. They don't have a path back home to the source that we do. So we can't lose in this endeavor. We cannot lose this game. They can, because in my view, they don't come from source. They don't come from the original emanation that a soul being does. So they're in a very sticky situation, and I don't think, even though they have this terrible pain nailed to their soul, which to some degree I can sympathize with and even empathize with, I wouldn't want to swap place with that, and I wouldn't want to entertain any of their power in a trillion years. I wouldn't be interested. I look at them and think, your days are over. This game of control has served its purpose to show that optimal negative polarity is a necessary part of the journey. It's a necessary part of the third density. We've done the positive, we've done the balance, we've done the negative, and now we come to a point of integration and collapse, a very happy collapse. Although if all your consciousness is seeded into the 3D, it can feel, of course, quite the reverse, like it's the end of history. But really, we're talking about a natural evolution. And so my work, personally, collectively, literary, whatever, is concerned with an adjustment to one's attitude to say, let me propose to you the idea that this shift, this universal shift, continually going on but coming to a very interesting peak at the moment, is in nobody's control and never was and never will be. But certain entities use it in a very entrepreneurial and crafty way to achieve certain things. The difference is this time, which is unique, not only in the 25,000-year cycle, but in the much larger billions of years level of time cycling, certainly from a third density. What's unique about this is that consciousness itself propels forward. And everybody who is in the least interested into it can use that as a carrier wave to upgrade themselves. And I believe that those who are not interested in that, who don't have the heart in that, seek their own oblivion. And that's okay. Because the point of Earth is not to have billions of happy, lovely people here. The point of Earth is a training ground for consciousness itself. Not a little thing in our heads, but something we contribute to, we share in, we sculpt, we create, we change, we modify, we adapt. That's what this is about. And if people aren't participating in that, then they don't have a role. And if you don't have a role, you can just put your ticket in and go back and not play anymore, i.e. go into oblivion, go into source, dip yourself into oblivion. And that's okay. And so to some extent, it puts a rather different focus on this globalist agenda. Because let's say that it was the thing that the Earth needs a big reboot and get people off the face of it. Wouldn't it be a very clever thing to do to make it look like that was their doing?
And that was
some technology that they were putting upon us and that it was disastrous and a very bad thing. Wouldn't that be the cleverest thing to do? I think it would.
Yeah, you're right. They would use that opportunity to become, in our eyes, more powerful, and hence we give even more of our energy to them.
That's right, and it's simply not true. And so you have to be very, very honest with yourself, very brutally honest with oneself, and say, is half the problem our attitude?
And I think it's more.
The answer to that...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Is the problem, let us say then, is the problem our attitude? And I think it is. And it doesn't just mean rising up and taking over. That's not quite enough. It means going inside. It means doing a bit of self-development, although that might sound a bit schoolgirlish to some tough guys out there who only want to look in the doom porn magazines, shall we say. Mm. It might seem a bit kind of flimsy to worry about self-development and emotions and so on and so forth. And yet these lie at the very heart of this issue, because if you can't go into your own deep emotional landscape, you are nothing. You cannot be a warrior. You are a schoolchild left in the home when the big boys go out to play. So you have to understand the relationship between your internal landscape and the external theater out there. And that is discussed in this book at length through stories, through metaphysics, through spiritual insight, through humor, through everything that I can think of to do it, to shape it, to discuss it. And like all these things, all you can really do is say to people, well, look at it this way, go and do that and see what you come up with. You can't say, this is it, this is the way it is, because it's only that for me. For everybody else, it's something different. But you can say the principle of this, the approach to this, and a way of thinking about this seems to be very powerful, and it seems to increase our level of awareness, and it seems to clear a lot of this very murky static about why is the world so odd. It seems to clear a lot of that up. And so the day-to-day existence is not one of a warrior. It's one of engagement, and it's one of commitment, and it's one of joy, and it's one of sorrow, and it's one of power. And you start to reframe what it is to be a human being and to realize that what we call joy and sorrow really are reflections of the polarities of the positive and the negative. And in themselves, they're not particularly significant. But our ability to transform them, to bring in these things and do something with them when they come in and put them out in a different way, is very significant. So it's like taking a piece of music, a score, paper with the music on the ruled lines, looking at the notes and developing that melody, developing that score, and saying, I'm going to make this so pure, so vibrant, so beautiful, that it's going to be stunning, it's going to be good, it's going to be really good, and I'm going to fully commit my consciousness to this endeavor. So we have that score, that musical score, right in front of us. It is our life, it is our way of being, it is our social landscape, good and bad. It's real human culture, and it's fake human culture, all mixed up together. Your endeavor is to grasp that score and say, well, you do something about that then. Don't just sit there looking at screens and pages. Do something about it. In your actions, yes, your flesh and your bone, but also in your heart and in your voice and in your deeds and in your engagement and in your relationships, in what you share, in what you destroy, in what you create. Actually become involved. Be a participant in the unfoldment of the universe. Be in it. Don't moan about it and just say, I watched it all go down. So what? What would it be nice to say, I was there at the time when the shift occurred, when, as happens millions of times, one way of life turned into another way of life, a different way of being. I was there, and I participated in it. I was fully involved in that with my family and friends, with my society, with culture, with the media. I played a role in that, and it was very significant. And not the fact that there were millions of people applauding me or reading or listening. No, the significance and the success of that is valued only in your personal level of commitment. So you can only know your own success. Are you participating as a fully committed, vibrant, complete human being or not? And you can grade that as a percentage and say, well, I'm participating 2%. I'm massively underperforming and I know I can do so much better. And so people need a bit of help with this and a bit of confidence and to understand that it's completely possible and doable. And actually, it's quite fun as well.
I think that the concept to a certain degree is lost when one asks, but what should I do or what can I do? But at the same time, since we're in a sense talking about the newcomer here as well, I understand that question. I understand what the people are like lost in all of this and don't know what path to walk down, or maybe even that there is a path to walk down, because as we've talked about here before, I mean, there is a passive approach to life in most cases. You sit around, you wait for the orders, you wait to be told what to do, how to think, etc. We know this. So it's very, very difficult. So in your opinion, Neil, how does one take charge of one's own life to begin to discover that we can walk, you know, our own path here?
That's a really, really good question. Very important practical elements to that. It begins with the recognition, to recognize that what you're doing here is significant. You're not just a guy or a girl who's not as good as so-and-so or not quite got the level of intelligence or bravery or skill necessary to do such and such a thing. That way of thinking has to go. Every single individual here, every single conscious entity has a very significant role to play. You are a very sacred presence in the universe, very loved, very powerful, very dynamic. And there has to be that recognition. And I try to get that over in the book and describe why that is and where we have precedence for that and why that's such a potent thing and why it's such a wonderful thing. It begins with that. Without that, all those things of what can I do begin to look a bit thin and, you know, flaccid, shall we say. So that isn't going to really go very far without that recognition. When you have that recognition that, yes, you are special, and so is everyone else, this whole thing is special, when you realize that and that your role in it is absolutely equal to everyone else's, the only difference between someone who is achieving and someone isn't is their faith in their own divinity, let's say, not in a religious sense, but in a very practical, powerful, physical sense. Mm-hmm. But when you realize that everyone has this equal level of potential and equal level of potential power, then your flavor of day-to-day being starts to take on a rather more enchanting, again, in the magical sense of the word, aspect. What you do becomes more fulfilling. Synchronicity starts to increase, as everyone has often heard me say. So the connections between one set of circumstances and voices and people and hearts start to reveal themselves. And you see that indeed this is a very coherent place. It's not just a big, weird, empty platform with a load of objects and people wandering about. That's not true. It's actually a very, very interconnected, interpenetrating set of waveforms. And when you alter your waveform to be very clear and powerful and resonant, and your oscillation, shall we say, let's imagine that's all we are is a waveform. Imagine your oscillation is very, very harmonic, very beautiful, very unique. That's your energy signature. And what we're trying to do is find out what our energy signature is. What are our powers? What are our skills? What is our artistry? What is our trajectory? So it begins with a spiritual question. You can't really go tremendously far without that. But when that happens, then you start to realize there's an awful lot to do. You have to develop this emotional power. You have to understand what emotions are. What is depression? What is arousal? What is elation? What is melancholy? What are those things? They're vibrations of energy. So what are they for then? What's the relevance of those to the human condition? And then you have to look at other interesting things for the warrior, for the spiritual warrior. What is free will? Very important this. Perhaps we'll expand on this later. But free will, very, very important human thing. Not all conscious entities in this universe have free will, but humans do. It's very significant. That's why there's such a lot of activity on Earth. Free will is very special in the universe. Other things. Oh, there's been this big conditioning exercise for quite a long time on Earth with the naughty Egyptians and Romans and British and Americans and funny families and bloodlines all getting together, scurrying around with little cloaks on, doing satanic things, in quotes, and all that malarkey. Yeah, that happens. That does really, really happen. What about that? What's the relevance of that? That is an area of study, of course, in itself. How do we detach the media from that negative symbol resonance? And I know you've done a whole little show on that, a video. Where are those symbols from? What do they mean? What is a symbol? What is a logo? A logo, is it the word, like the word of God, the logos, the logos? What do those symbols do? How can a shape be anything significant? And we start to understand that shapes, geometry, are like energy machines. They do things. They do things to the real world. And then you look at other things. You look at, there was an ancient world here. There was a world that we have no knowledge of on Earth, that very magical, astonishing things happened day in, day out. And those people all over the planet have seen all this before. They've seen this old, old, old narrative come and go, this storm in a teacup before. They've seen it. Let us then say, how fascinating would it be to go and make contact with that text and say, well, what happened last time? What was the outcome? Who were the players? What were the different strategies used? How can that help us today in our current narrative? It might have happened lots of times, but to the people now, seems very important, doesn't it? Seems very unique. It's very relevant. It's very prescient, these themes. So let us see what precedents there are for that and look at them and apply them to what's now. Not having knowledge is no use without application in any area of life. Personally, collectively, galactically, doesn't matter. If you cannot apply your knowledge, it has very limited value. It becomes a mere fancy, a mere amusement. You have to be able to apply it. And so there are so many areas to get involved in. When people say, what can I do? I have to sit them down and take them through this tremendously exciting spiritual syllabus, this curriculum, to say, well, there are many classes, there are many schools, there are many areas of study, practical, physical, spiritual. There are many adventures to go on, many realizations, many, many unfoldments. Let us see from who you are and what you're about, what would naturally resonate with you. Because this diagnostic approach is very important. You can't throw someone into being a scholar who is naturally an athlete. You can't throw somebody who is naturally a nerd into being a lover or a musician if they don't have the confidence in themselves to express their true nature, because the end result will be very limited. So you have to look at the individual and you have to treat them with respect as a perfect, perfect divine emanation who has just forgotten who they are and gone off track a bit, and say to them, right, I'm going to treat you with a bit of respect. I'm going to treat you seriously as one of my kinsmen. And I'm going to say, look, you've got everything in you, but you don't know what to do about it and how to use it. It's not about joining a club or a society or a movement. It's about engaging with the universe. And there are a million ways to do that. Let us find out what methods are best aligned with your natural capabilities, your natural skills. So what can I do? That question has got a very lovely set of answers to go with it. Many, many things you can sit down and talk to people, but it takes a little time. You can't just lay it out on a website necessarily. You have to explore it through discourse and through communication and through experience. So it's like taking a student and saying, the student says at the beginning of university, what can I do? And the tutors and the lecturers and the professors and the senior students, let's say it's a wonderful university full of amazing, true people, they would go to that student and go, well now, what can you do? What an incredible question. How many lovely answers we have to share with you. It's just the same thing.
Hmm. Really, really interesting. I think it's about self-discovery, and therefore there has to be an internal drive to begin with, to an intention and a will to begin that journey. But I want to return for a moment to a point that you mentioned before. You talked about it has to be fair, you know, working towards making, it is fair. That's what you mentioned. This was your point, that things are already fair in how things are constructed. But the fact is that we are missing that point. If we look at the world right now, Neil, we know that many people are working towards creating a kind of a egalitarian utopia almost. It's what we see with the ideas of redistribution, and that we have to have a Robin Hood here before we can, you know, begin to make a move in the world, because everyone has that victim mentality again, that nope, it's them, everything is already controlled, or it's the bankers, so we have to begin working on this level of you know, joining the movement or the, you know, the occupy people, what have you, first, before we can even begin to make a move. But is that a fallacy in your opinion then? Do you feel that that's working on the wrong level?
As soon as you externalize the roots of the problem, you lose. As soon as you put the problem outside of you, you lose. You have no right to say anything or do anything. You lose. You go out of balance and you go out of truth. You can look around and validly say, with complete legitimacy, there is a lot of injustice in this world. There is a lot of disharmony, and a lot of it is absolutely unnecessary. The power that we need from the sun is total. It would run everything, period, here. A very crude method. If we want to be cleverer, we can use, of course, this zero-point field. We can use this faculty that energy has when it flips from one dimensional realm, shall we say, to another, mm-hmm. to generate energy. So energy is free and bountiful and abundant, and that is solved. Nobody wants to go around being an asshole to each other and stabbing and shooting it. Nobody wants that. People who go to church and are conditioned in a very negative way, they don't want to be like that, but they feel that they're waging a war. What people want is a spiritual experience. They want something aside, a sacred space. And so I would even say 95% of the stupid Christians and Jews and Muslims are only stupid in the fact that they put the power outside of themselves. Mm-hmm. Their heart is true, and the people are good, and what they want to achieve is very worthwhile, and their experiences are valid. So their stupidity is a virus with which they've been infected. It doesn't come from them, it comes from the outside. Once that is gone, once that is disinfected, shall we say, that stupidity dissolves, then you have billions of men and women seeking a sacred spiritual experience. How wonderful is that? Yeah. So we can't discard people who are conditioned, because that conditioning can be undone very quickly and very easily, but it takes a certain attitude, and that attitude rests on a very dangerous principle these days, which I think is very, very exciting and wonderful, which is that this absolute divinity lies within us, and this absolute divinity infers absolute power. And so the most dangerous thing on earth right now is absolute power. And so how incredible and funny is it that every single one of those 7 billion souls has that inside them? And the only thing that prevents them from shaping it in good ways, shall we say, in constructive, harmonious, dynamic ways, mm-hmm. is the fact that they don't understand what it is, how to use it, how to instruct it, how to shape it, how to evolve it. They have no idea at all. And when you don't know something exists, you don't know its whereabouts, you don't know its function, it's inert. It's almost as if it doesn't exist. And so that is the adventure right now, is the discovery, the solution is right there in front of our faces. It's all there. Absolute authority in yourself, absolute permission for each individual to have direct communication with the divine, because it emanates from within us. We are an emanation of it. No intermediaries needed. We have absolute godhood in our selfhood, in our animal nature. We can enjoy all that together. We are flesh and blood. We are divine beings. We are humble nothingness. We are this glorious experiment of self, this abstract expressionist spray of color. That is us. And we can engage with that and enjoy it and say, wow, it's crazy being Henrik. Wow, it's crazy being Neil. It's really interesting. I've become very fond of it in some ways. And yet, it's just a very, very brief expression of spirit. It's a very, very interesting chapter in a very, very massive book. The little chapter on being Kramer, you know. It's relevant. It has a message. It is important. And yet it isn't everything. So there are these very fundamental spiritual truths that get missed out from the Christian and Muslim and Judaic texts. And that's a shame, because, again, I find myself on my travels in churches, in Methodist and Presbyterian and Baptist churches, believe it or not. And when I go to those places and commune with these people, I see good people. I see really, really good, solid people who are just looking in the wrong direction, but their intent is good. And at least they're trying. At least they're trying to do something.
Yeah, good point.
And although it's not the best way of doing it, it would be very selfish and elitist for us to disregard all those people, even the ones who get a bit fundamentalist about it. It's really a bit silly, right? I might think about that differently when they blow up the plane that I'm on, but it's still silly. Neil Kramer will shit his pants when that happens, just like everyone else, obviously. But my spirit will think, that's a bit silly. That was a bit silly, wasn't it? There's a much better way of doing things than that. And I think we have to develop this multidimensional set of perspectives that, yes, I need to eat and drink and make music and make love. I also need to have this spiritual, philosophical perspective all the time. I also need to be able to have this divine perspective all the time. So you have to be able to zoom in and out of our own affairs. And when we do that, the joyful bit of it, which is very relevant right now, especially with all the things in Europe, and at the time of this recording, it looks like the Greeks are about to come out of the euro, and everybody's scurrying around and wondering what's going to happen. And it's just such a huge, enormous irrelevance. So funny, so desperate, so grotesque. But when you look at it from a pure self-authority, sovereign being perspective, it loses its punch. It's not going to wind you anymore. It's not going to knock you sideways. You just observe it and say, well, that's what happens when you have people who don't know who they are and what they're doing. That's what happens when people do not become involved in their own unfoldment, in their own ascendant journey. This is what happens. You get funny, strange schemes endlessly twirling around in the shadows. And that is a symptom, not a cause. That is a symptom of this amnesia. It's a symptom of becoming uncomfortable with your own amnesia. We first have to acknowledge it before we can move on.
Yeah.
But just focusing on the symptoms, as any holistic medical professional will tell you, is never going to cure the problem. It's just going to describe the symptoms. You have to go to the root of it, which is inside.
Wow, this is very interesting. It's a dense and rich conversation. Lots of things to think about. You know, very good, Neil. I think we should take a little break here at this point, and then continue talking more here in the second, and basically just kind of carry on as we do here, because it's really good stuff. And so, why don't we talk a little bit about where people can go to pick up a copy of the book if they're interested in, you know, reading more? And you do have a couple of other things available as well on your website, neilkramer.com. So tell us about that, Neil.
Well, neilkramer.com, you can find everything there. The book is linked from there. So all the big online book retailers, you know who they are. Go to any of those people. Just Google Neil Kramer, The Unfoldment. Go to the website to look about it. You'll see some links to three or four of the obvious retailers. Also, there is my audio book material there, the Audio Cleaver. There is also a workshop DVD filmed over 3 days just last autumn, which is very good, very interesting, a lot of juicy material relevant to the things we've been talking about here. There's an events section. There is also my teaching work, my one-on-one sessions, coaching sessions with people. That's what I spend half my time doing, in fact, these days, which is wonderful. So neilkramer.com, everything is available from there.
Really good. neilkramer.com, that is the website. We're going to carry on talking more. Stay with us, Neil. We'll be right back after this break. In the second hour, we begin discussing intelligences in the universe, including beings in the fourth, fifth, and sixth dimensions. Neil talks about the fourth dimension and the beings who reside within it. He talks about their dilemma and their relationship to humans. Then we talk about the recent cosmic gear shift propelling us to the next level. Yet each one of us operates at a different speed, and some will eventually graduate from humanity into another form. We'll discuss polarities and dimensional overlapping, and later Neil converses about free will as a divine will. As one operates in divine will, they become harmonious with the universe, untouchable and sovereign. RedIceCreations.com is the website. If you like what we do and want to hear more, go to our website and acquire a membership if you haven't done so already. It's not much money, but it helps us to proceed forward and continue to bring you more material. Next on Red Ice Radio, you'll be able to hear Joan B. Wells from Coast to Coast AM. After this, we are going to talk about the measure of the cosmos with Peter Halldórsson from Iceland. Then we have Nora Gedgaudas, Britt D. and Tom Secker, Richard Grove, Winter Lake, Alex Newman, Eric Karlström, Janice Barcelo, Grunvalo Melchizedek, Jordan Maxwell, and many more. We hope to have you with us soon again. You're welcome to tune in at any time for more radio on exciting and important topics. Check out our brand new Radio 314 as well. More with Neil Kramer is coming up next. Thank you for staying with us.